mean, I think I'm right in saying that the series is probably being viewed a little differently in Milwaukee than it is in Toronto.
I think that's a fair assumption. I think we can go with that.
When did it all come together for the Bucks in that series against Boston? But, you know, look, we know that they, after the first game, you know, we know that Paul Pierce came out and said that the Celtics were going to win the series in four. But at what point in that series did you think that the Bucks had it? You know, that they were on the verge of putting Boston away? Because it seems to me it happened really quickly. It's like we almost looked up one day and you're going, oh, the Celtics are dead.
Yeah, I think the third quarter of game four is when it really changed for me. I mean, obviously game two, the Bucks crushed them. You know, both teams had traded haymakers at that point. The Celtics with a big win, then the Bucks with a big win. You know, game three, the Bucks took back home court advantage. But I still thought that in game four, the Celtics could really, you know, change the dynamic of the series by bringing it back to Milwaukee, tied at two. Mm-hmm. Then Giannis Antetokounmpo goes to the bench with three fouls. Chris Middleton, or four fouls, and Chris Middleton goes to the bench with four fouls, and Eric Bledsoe's on the bench, and the Bucks are playing this Brook Lopez plus bench unit. And the Celtics were up two, and I thought, okay, like, this is the time where the Celtics can really take advantage, and instead the opposite happened. You know, the Bucks built a 10-point lead with their bench on the court, with none of their, you know, three-star players out there, and they were able to take an 8-point lead into the fourth quarter, bringing in their big guns all fresh, and were able to close out that game. And at that point, I said, all right, the series is over. I'm not coming back to Boston for game six. It's just not happening. The Celtics team is done. And the Bucks, you know, obviously brought that to fruition, dominating in game five. So I think that third quarter of game four really, really changed things.
You know, we talked a little bit in this show about how there's kind of an interesting coaching matchup here, and that Mike Budenholzer was the guy that Masai Ujiri wanted to be head coach of this team when the decision was made to fire Dwayne Casey. I don't think that's necessarily any secret. What have you learned about Mike Budenholzer in your time covering the team that maybe surprised you? Because, you know, a lot of people forget how good that team was that he had in Atlanta, or I should say what a good job of coaching that was with that team in Atlanta. And it just seemed as if it just evaporated all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think that the thing that maybe this has stood out to me is just the way he's been able to build a rapport with his players just so quickly, starting, you know, all the way back even before training camp. You know, guys were already bought in on him and what he wanted to do and his personality. He was instilling confidence in them. He was building them up in a way that they really, really took to. And he's been able to continue that throughout the season to be able to, you know, keep things consistent and efficient and fun. And you know, guys have really lauded him for that and praised him for that. I think that, you know, at least around Milwaukee, I've had to remind people, you know, during points of the Bucks season where, you know, they were playing well, but maybe not at the level that people might expect. They're like, oh, well, this Bucks team might just be a 60-win team like that Hawks team that underachieved. And it's like, well, that Hawks team went to the Eastern Conference Finals before they lost to LeBron James, just like everyone else has done for the past 8 years. It's not like, you know, they were a terrible team. They were a really solid team that ran into a juggernaut. And, you know, but this Bucks team, they have potentially, you know, the Eastern Conference's new version of LeBron James in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, he's better than anybody the Hawks had back on that 60-win team. And so, you know, it's a very different dynamic. This Bucks team is certainly more talented than that Hawks team, and especially, you know, when it comes to top-end talent. And they can become a team that can be a force for multiple years as long as they can keep him, which, you know, winning is the only thing he's professed to care about. And if they can keep winning, he's not going anywhere. So as long as they can kind of keep the team together and keep things rolling, I mean, they can be a team that competes at the top, you know, of the Eastern Conference or near the top of the Eastern Conference, you know, for a while. So that really all stems from, yeah, from Budenholzer coming in and organizing these guys into the right spots and taking advantage of all their talents, and being able to manage all their personalities to the point where, you know, it's a pretty happy locker room overall. They all get along, and the culture is just, you know, noticeably more positive than it's been.
Mm. Matt Velasquez covers the Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. When did Brooke Lopez discover that it was okay to take and make 3-point shots? Was that just simply a matter of that it's become such a part of the Bucks culture that you either basically you get on board or your seat's taken by somebody else? Because that's one of the most remarkable career turnarounds we've seen in some time.
Yeah, that was actually a few years ago. This is his third season shooting threes. He first started doing it in Brooklyn under Kenny Atkinson, who was a former assistant of Mike Budenholzer's. And when Atkinson got there, he brought the idea to Brooke, and he said, "Hey, you know, you should start working on your shot. You absolutely have a good mid-range shot. You're a good free throw shooter. You should step out behind the 3-point line to start doing it." And so, you know, Lopez went out and he did a lot of practicing and got himself prepared, and, you know, he had the green light out in Brooklyn and started making them at a pretty decent clip, about 35%. And then he went to the Lakers, and he kept doing it. He shot about 35%. And this summer, you know, the Bucks, you know, saw him as a free agent, and they targeted him, very heavily. You know, they wanted him. They knew he'd fit perfectly in their system with the way that Mike Budenholzer would play. And he was one of their top-tier free agent guys they were looking at, and they got him on a great deal. And so once he was on board, they said, "Hey, you know, everyone here he's going to have the green light to let it fly." I mean, Mike Budenholzer just yesterday was asked what a bad shot is. And he said, he kind of jokingly said, "There aren't really any bad shots." But then he walked it back and said, "Yeah, a bad shot is a contested shot of any kind. We don't want contested shots, especially contested threes, you know, but a contested three is better than a contested mid-range shot, at least to them." So, you know, Brooke Lopez absolutely has the green light. He's been working on it really, for a few years now. He's had games where he's gone like 8 of 13. He had a game where he went 0 of 12 on threes, and nothing has changed. Everyone keeps telling him to shoot. He's coming off a series in which he didn't shoot it particularly well. But you better believe that if he gets a wide-open 30-footer, he's gonna chuck it up as often as he can.
Matt, I found it interesting after the Raptors had eliminated Philadelphia in his post-game news conference, Kyle Lowry was talked about the Bucks and what challenges they presented. And, of course, he went through the usual ones, starting with Giannis. But he also mentioned George Hill and talked about the respect he had for George Hill and how, you know, they've matched up in playoff series in the past. And I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the impact George Hill has had and also the impact, the return that Malcolm Brogdon's had. Because I think I think Malcolm Brogdon can be a guy that tips the balance in this series.
George Hill has been a fantastic acquisition for the Bucks, you know, and really one of the main goals from getting George Hill was to, you know, get off some salary. They were able to trade John Henson and Matthew Dellavedova and get off, you know, their salary for next year. They're both on 2-year deals, and that was in George Hill's deal this summer. They can waive him before free agency starts, and they'll only owe him $1 million instead of, I think it's 19. So they're able to clear out a whole bunch of cap space this summer to be able to re-sign guys like Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, potentially Nikola Mirotic, Brooke Lopez. If they want to keep the team together, now they have more salary to do it. But they also, you know, in getting George Hill, they didn't just get somebody who could, you know, help them clear the books. They got a guy who has experience in the NBA Finals as recently as last year, who's played on some really good teams, is a starting-level talent in the NBA, and he's coming off their bench, and he's just a very steady veteran who plays well with others. I mean, he moves the ball around. He sometimes, you know, passive to a fault, where Budenholzer is always going on him to be more aggressive, to call his own number, to look for his shots, because when he's aggressive, that's when he tends to be at his best. And he's been generally pretty aggressive in these playoffs, providing a huge spark off the bench. And even when Malcolm Brogdon came back for game 5 against the Celtics, you know, Budenholzer said, "Hey, you know, George isn't going to play any less. You know, he's earned the opportunity to be out there because of the way that he defends and he spreads the ball on offense and can score." But, you know, Brogdon's definitely going to get some minutes this series. He's still on a limited minutes basis right now, probably around 20 at most, I would expect, for game one, coming off his plantar fascia tear. But he's a guy who shot 50-40-90 this season, something that very few players in the NBA have ever done, in making over 50% of his field goals, over 40% of his threes, and he led the NBA shooting 92.8% on free throws. He's somebody who can put his head down and drive. He can also, make catch and shoot threes at a really high rate. And just having another weapon, to be able to come off the bench, it's just huge for the Bucks. I mean, that's something that I know the Raptors have struggled with in the postseason, and finding guys on their bench who can contribute. And that's been a very big difference between the two teams, where the Bucks have basically everyone Mike Budenholzer has gone to has brought positives on both ends of the court, and they just keep coming wave after wave after wave, allowing the starters to be rested for when they need to close out the game.